Good morning. Hope you are doing well this morning. We are going to continue our series today on wisdom. And last week we covered the power of our words. And I thought it was a timely message that God led me to with the events of the week before. And how we need to be especially careful in times like this when the temperature is so high in our nation. Be careful with our words, make sure we're using our words in a wise manner that brings people into a closer relationship with God. Today we're going to be covering another topic that is covered in depth in Proverbs, and it is diligence or working hard versus laziness. Now, let's be honest with you, I kind of had a hard time with this message, kind of not, because I understand the importance of working hard. But when I was going through, I've read through Proverbs before, and when I was doing my study for this series, I'm not sure I realized just how much it talks about the importance of working hard and the importance of us not living idle or lazy lives. And maybe I've just kind of overlooked it because here in southern Randolph County, and really in Randolph County in general, if there's one thing people know how to do around here, it is to work. We live in an agriculturally driven area. You go down into Moore County, you go down to Montgomery County, you go all throughout Randolph County. There are fields everywhere. And so to be in an agriculturally driven area, hard work and working hard is a key aspect of the values in our community. And so those were values that have been instilled in many of us from a young age. And while there might not be as many farmers nowadays, I think that is often playing out in a lot of our factories around here, Sapona, Toyota now, eventually the Jet place that's opening up in Greensboro, also some in Siler City, along with Energizer and those in Asheboro. I think because working hard is such a value in the community that I grew up in, it's something I value in other people. And because I value people who work hard, I cannot stand when people are lazy. And I worked with enough of those people at Food Lion that it drove me insane. There's specifically one that was that I worked with that would always come in late, would stay in the office or stay somewhere in the back when they're supposed to be on the front end helping us out, and then would try to leave early a lot of times. And they just would not do their job. And what I learned is that when there's one person not doing their job, it creates frustration for everyone else. It creates extra work for everyone else involved. And I'm sure that you have experienced that as well. That bothers me, but you know what really bothers me? When someone claims to be a Christian and is one of the laziest people in a workplace. When followers of God are some of the laziest people, it is just not good on so many levels. Number one, it's not a good witness to Jesus. It is, people are not going to want to follow Jesus if his followers are going to act like that, are not going to pull their own weight in the workplace, or are going to be lazy. But number two, I think about Jesus commanded us to love God, love others. You're not loving others when you're not pulling your weight. When you're not doing what you should be doing, it is not helpful to others. It's not loving. And ultimately, what we're going to talk about today is when we are lazy, it's not good for us. And so I think it matters to God how we work, and it should matter to us. And Proverbs has a lot to say about it. So I want to first cover these two definitions here. This is the contrast that Solomon, who wrote Proverbs, this is the contrast that he sets up. He uses the word diligent a lot and lazy. And so diligent means hardworking or showing care. It is someone who works hard. It is someone who does a really good job with their job. They hold up their end of the bargain. But lazy or laziness is someone who is unwilling to work, or they're at work and they neglect their duties, or they love making excuses. we throw the term lazy around a lot. And so I wanted to see exactly how Proverbs defined that, and that's the definition that I could kind of come up with through my studies and my understanding of what Proverbs is saying. My iPad keeps turning off, so I got to figure out how to fix that. And so what we're going to see today is the contrast between the two and the benefits that come with diligence and the consequences that come with laziness. Now, before I get into that, one reason why I think this sermon is a little bit hard for me is because I think that we can define someone as lazy that might not be lazy. And so I want to make that very clear. I am not, when I talk about people not working, not willing to work, I am not talking about those who can't work due to some sort of disability or something of that nature. So I don't want you, if you feel like you, if you have a disability and you can't work, I don't want you to feel like that God is speaking against you or I am speaking against you. I'm not trying to, don't let the devil use it to shame you because of your disability. I want to make that clear from the get-go, just so that we have that understanding. I'm not attacking you. But I am going to teach what the Bible teaches about diligence versus laziness. And Zach's going to have up there on his screen, for the word diligence, he's going to have working hard, because that's kind of where I was at, but I went on and put diligence on my screen, but they essentially mean the same thing. So let's first dive into Proverbs and talk about the rewards that come with this and the consequences that come with this. Diligence equals abundance, and laziness equals poverty. If you work hard, you're going to have an abundance of resources. And if you are lazy, you're going to be in poverty or be poor. And that comes from a few verses here. Proverbs 10:4 is the most apparent one. It says, "Lazy hands make for poverty, but diligent hands bring wealth." So lazy hands, the ones that are not willing to work or not willing to do anything, you're going to be poor. Poverty means poor. But diligent hands, hands that work hard, they are going to bring wealth. And if you're going back to our sermon where we talked about finances and what Proverbs said about finances, wealth does not just mean money. Back then, wealth was all their resources, and they didn't really have money per se back then. And so this was all of the things that they owned that they could use for trading. So when I say resources and when I use the word abundance, you're going to have an abundance, it means that you're going to have your needs met and maybe even your wants if you have diligent hands. Now, it's interesting here that Solomon is using hands because hands is what you do work with. That is the picture that he's wanting to put in our head of what we do work with. Proverbs 12:11 says this, "Those who work their land will have abundant food, but those who chase fantasies have no sense." So those who work their land will have abundant food. There we're talking about the resources, you're going to have what you need. But those who chase fantasies have no sense. Now that's interesting to me. I actually had this talking more about dreams and how we often will have dreams about what we want to do and then we never do it. But I save that for the next verse because I think that's what the next verse is talking about. And so after I thought more about what does it mean chasing fantasies, I think nowadays especially, we can live in this fantasy world. Flip on that TV and you're living in the world of NCIS or you're living in the world of whatever. And or playing video games or reading books. I mean, reading books is not necessarily a bad thing, but if you're constantly living in those books, that's not a good thing. We can live in this fantasy land where we're trying to escape reality and never work, and there are, unfortunately, people who live that way. And that's often how people really go off track in their life and can even go to the extreme on some things. But then Proverbs 14:23, it says, "All hard work brings a profit, but mere talking leads only to poverty." This is where I was thinking, and we've all done this, I'm sure. I've done it in my house, you've done it, I'm sure, at yours, where we say, hey, here's what I'm going to do here. I'm going to do this, this, and this, and this. That's talk. But then we never do it. We never start the work. And even when I work sometimes, especially now where I don't have like a set schedule, I'll say in the morning, I'm going to get this, this, and this done. But then here I am 3 hours later and I've got nothing done. And so we have to make sure that we are working hard in our life and not just talking, coming up with these plans that never get done. Going back to the definition of laziness, one of the definitions is they make excuses. We can talk the talk, but then we make excuses on why it doesn't get done. And you probably have hired contractors like that. You probably have come across workers like that. That's going to lead to poverty, according to what Solomon says here. And so essentially what Solomon is reminding us in Proverbs, and specifically in these three verses, is this is just how life works. I don't think it's that God causes those who are lazy to be poor or causes those who work hard to have an abundance. I think that this is just how the world works. Another way of saying that is you reap what you sow. So if you reap laziness, you're not going to have anything. If you reap hard work, then you're going to have what you need. You might not have everything you want. And when we hear the word abundant, we think about overflowing wealth. Sometimes that can be worse than having nothing. And so when I say abundance, I mean your needs are going to be met. And I think Solomon telling us this, that this is just how the world works, that makes sense to us in this room. But you know who it often doesn't make sense to? Those who are lazy. I'm sure you've come across people who are lazy, who don't work, who just don't live the way they should be living. And essentially, they tend to act like they don't know why they are poor. And essentially, the answer here is because you aren't working. What we have created in our society is a victim mindset. We blame our problems and maybe our lack of resources on anyone and everyone else other than ourselves. We blame our parents. We blame our ancestors. We blame our government. We blame society. And some people even blame God for their poverty or for being poor. On the flip side, though, hard work results in abundance of resources. You're not going to go through your life lacking. You're going to have your needs met because this is how the economy works. And so I think what Solomon is getting to here is that it's up to you what you have and what you don't have. If you want to live in poverty, then continue to be lazy. If you want to have an abundance, then work hard. Next thing Solomon covers is that diligence results in honor, and laziness results in dishonor. Proverbs 12:24 says that diligent hands, or hands that work hard, they will rule, but laziness ends in forced labor. So those who work hard will rule, which means they're going to move up in society, they're going to move up in the world. Specifically, I think about applying that to a workplace. The ones that work hard should be the ones that get promoted. I understand that that's not always how it works. Sometimes it's the ones that do the worst job that get promoted so that they're not in a job that matters as much. And you probably have experienced that. I've experienced that at Food Lion. But diligent hands, those who work hard, typically are going to be the ones that move up, are going to be your bosses, are going to be those that rule in society. Laziness ends in forced labor. That obviously is referring to slavery at that time. Today, you may feel like a slave when you're at work, but it's not quite the same, but still somewhat similar. Proverbs 22:29 says, "Do you see someone skilled in their work? They will serve before kings. They will not serve before officials of low rank." Once again, communicating that they're going to be in honored position serving before the kings, where those that are lazy are going to serve before officials of low rank. And then Proverbs 10:26, "As vinegar to the teeth," so it degrades the teeth, "and smoke to the eyes," you don't want smoke in your eyes, so are sluggards to those who send them. And we're going to cover sluggards here in a little bit, but sluggards is referring to lazy people. And this is one of Solomon's favorite words to use for lazy people. And it says that basically someone who is lazy, they dishonor those that they work for. They dishonor those who sent them. This would be like maybe if you work at a job where they have to send you out to other locations, they're not going to want to send you because they're embarrassed by your work. Or maybe they're embarrassed to have you employed at their place. And so they cut your hours or they end up letting you go. They bring dishonor to their bosses, and it brings dishonor to you. I don't think anyone looks at a lazy person and says, I want to be just like that. But if you work hard, if you're diligent in your work, it'll result in honor. The third thing that Proverbs really covers regarding diligence versus laziness is that diligence results in satisfaction and laziness results in frustration. Laziness results in frustration because of two ways. First, it's frustrating because they don't get what they want. Proverbs 13:4 says, a sluggard's appetite, so a lazy person's appetite, is never filled, but the desires of the diligent are fully satisfied. Proverbs 21:25, the craving of a sluggard will be the death of him because his hands refuse to work. So Solomon explains it here that, hey, the sluggard, the lazy person, they're always going to be wanting more. They're always going to want more resources. They're always going to want more of this, more of that. And why are they always wanting more? It's because they're not working to get more. So they never will have more. And he even says here, the craving of a sluggard will eventually be the death of them. I don't know if talking about a literal death, but I think that when we constantly have this craving for more and we're not taking the steps to accomplish that, I do think it creates this longing in our heart that can cause us to do some things that we normally wouldn't do. Example of this, in the New Testament, I'm not using this verse today, but I did come across it in my studies. Paul says to stop stealing. That basically they're stealing because they're poor, because they don't have. And Paul says, stop stealing and go to work. Like, it can cost you when you are constantly wanting more, it can cost you to do things that you normally wouldn't do, like steal, to get what you want rather than working hard to get what you want. And obviously, in our country, if you steal, you're going to get charged if you get caught. And that results in, I don't want to say death, but you are inviting chaos into your life. And it can eventually result in a death, or maybe something spiritual, maybe something more than that. But it's also frustrating. So the first way it's frustrating is because you never get filled. The second way that laziness is frustrating is because it creates obstacles in your way. Here's what it says in Proverbs 15:19. The way of the sluggard is blocked with thorns, but the path of the upright is a highway. So in other words, a lazy person's life is full of obstacles, full of things that they have to overcome, and that's frustrating. If you're constantly having to overcome one thing after another, after another, after another, that gets frustrating over time. And specifically what I think this is hinting at here is kind of what we talked about in our sermon on finances. The obstacles in their path are some of the problems of their own making. They choose, instead of working hard and making money, they choose to go into debt and then have to pay all this extra money in interest, and it just creates more obstacles to building long-term wealth, and so they never can rise above that. That's one of the examples of the obstacles that can be put in your place because you're lazy. On the flip side, though, diligence works in satisfaction. Why? Because number one, the path isn't harder than it needs to be, and because number two, they're getting what they want because they are working to get it. And ultimately, when talking about working hard, how it results in satisfaction, I think that gets to the heart of the matter here. We were created to work. As human beings, we were created to work. And I think if you don't work, you're always going to have something missing in your life. I know we were created to work because I see it in the creation account. Going back to Genesis chapter 2, verse 15. The Lord God took the man, put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and to take care of it. He created us to work. And this is before sin entered the world. You were created to work before sin entered the world. I also know we were created to work because we were created in the image of God. And God works. God created the world in 6 days and rested on the seventh. We're going to talk about that in a second. So we were created to work, and so if we are not working, if we're not doing something that we were created to do, deep down we feel that. Deep down we know something is missing, and you know I love looking at like modern day studies, science, facts, psychology, because if you look at the studies that are done today, it confirms what was written thousands of years ago. So this is saying here, the studies that have been done, they found that long-term unemployment significantly increases rates of depression, anxiety, and loss of self-esteem. Why is that? Because they're missing part of what they were created to do. People without meaningful work are 2 to 3 times more likely to struggle with mental health issues because they're missing something they were created to do. And I've seen this in people that I've talked with, and you probably have as well. And so I've come across people who are struggling with their mental health on very high levels. And one of the things I look at is, do you have a purpose in life? Not always that your job is your purpose. I think we have greater purposes than that, like being a mom or a dad. But do you have a purpose? Are you doing something with your life that's making an impact in the lives of other people? And so my first advice is, if you can get a job, then get a job. Because I think that when you are using your time in a way to make a meaningful impact that you can see, it makes a difference. And if you can't get a job, then do something with your life that makes an impact. Use your time in such a way that you know that you are making a positive difference in the world. So that looks different for everyone. Could be a stay-at-home mom or dad. It could be that you volunteer your time to some type of community service. If you go up to Randolph Hospital, there's a lot of people, retired folks, that are using their time at Randolph Hospital to make a meaningful impact there at the hospital. They're volunteering their time. Or maybe if you can't get out and do something, then maybe you can make things at home. Give them to other people as a testimony to the gospel. You can use your time in such a way that makes a positive impact. It gives you purpose. And I think that's true for those that maybe are disabled that can't work. Find something you can do to make a positive impact. And I think it's true for retirees. I think it was Charles Stanley who used to teach that don't retire. Like, always work. We were created to work. And I don't know if you have to stay on a 9-to-5 job your whole life, but find something to do with your life that makes a meaningful impact in the world. And I think that you will find that it feels a part of you in a way that being lazy doesn't. In Proverbs chapter 6, Solomon gives us a picture here of a sluggard versus an ant. And so when I think of sluggard, it does mean lazy person, but I think of an actual slug. And I've had my fair battles with slugs, and you're going to hear about that in a second. And then actually, when I went to my office this morning here at the church, I looked over at my trash can, and the ants were enjoying my coffee from last week in the trash can. So the trash can got thrown outside because there was a bunch of ants in there. So my sermon, I should have just brought the trash can up here. That would have been a better illustration, but I probably would have got bitten or something. But the ants were working hard. And that's what Proverbs 6 is getting to here. Here's what he says. Go to the ant, you sluggard. So I imagine him looking at ants and slugs, which there actually are often together. It says, consider its ways and be wise. It has no commander. It has no overseer or ruler. Yet the ant stores up its provisions in summer and gathers its food at harvest. How long will you lie there, you sluggard? When will you get up from your sleep? A little sleep and a little slumber and a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come on you like a thief and scarcity like an armed man. So he's Elijah right now will often want me to go outside with him, and we got to flip every rock that I use as like our landscaping border over because he wants to see what's underneath there. And oftentimes there is a slug and there's some ants. And you know, and he's fascinated because he's a boy and he's 3 years old. So he's fascinated with looking at that type of stuff. He won't touch a slug, but he will try to get the ants and ends up, you know, killing them when he grabs them. But it's okay. But they're often together. And that's the picture that's here is hey, you sluggard, you're just sitting there. Look at the ants. They're working hard. And that's exactly what the ants were doing in my office. They were just, there was a whole line of them going up and down the trash can, taking, I guess, what they love Starbucks, I guess, just taking whatever coffee they could get. And I was telling, yeah, cream and sugar, yeah, the pecan oatmeal latte. So it was delicious. Yeah, so somebody else has had a pecan oatmeal latte. I tell Bernard, and Bernard says, I think because it's dried up so much outside, they're coming inside to find what they can. And that's probably true. We've not had hardly any rain, so they're traveling inside. They're trying to store up food for the winter that is coming. They're working hard. In fact, they say the ants can carry up to 50 times their body weight. And if you think about it, about every time you come across ants, they are working. They are doing something. I know out here behind back, we have horrible fire ants around here, but out here up back, you could just see a line of ants marching across the pavement out here, working hard. Ants work. Slugs, I very rarely see them doing anything. We uncover those rocks and the ants are just moving and the slugs just sitting there. They are doing nothing. They stay underneath rocks or other dent places. They move slowly. And I have unfortunately found out in the last year that slugs eat plants, leaves, I think even roots some. They eat fruits, they eat vegetables and fungi. And I found that out through, I had a vivarium, so it's a live ecosystem. I had water in a aquarium tank, and then I planted, I had a base layer where the water drained through the soil and came up there, but it basically just created its own water cycle where I didn't really have to do anything. And I planted plants in there. And I caught a couple tree frogs, put the tree frogs in there because I thought Elijah would like that. And so what I would do is I would feed the tree frogs, I don't know what the technical name of them are, but roly-polies, the little roly things, you know, that you find out in the woods. So me and Elijah would go hunt crickets and roly-polies. And, you know, once again, he loved it. Roly-polies eat like dead bark, dead leaves, dead things like that. So I would break off a little piece of wood where a ton of roly-polies are on it, and I'd just go put it in the tank because I know that the frogs, when they're hungry, they'll go eat it. But what I found out is there was a slug hidden in there. And guess who killed all my plants? That slug. Guess who got the side of my tank dirty? That slug. It was a nuisance to my ecosystem that was present in the aquarium, and now I just kind of gave up on it. And it's somewhere else, and the slug's not in there anymore, but he'd done enough damage while he was in there. You know, I've learned that lazy people can do the same thing, can mess up the ecosystem in our lives, in our families, in our workplaces. One lazy person can kill a culture in a workplace. One lazy person can suck the life out of you and make you not want to go to work. In fact, I think that lazy people can make society worse. And I just want to say this. I don't think anyone in this room is lazy, so I'm not necessarily preaching at someone. I'm preaching to the choir. But I think we all probably thought of someone, when I was saying that, that is lazy. We probably thought of someone at work. We probably thought of someone in our own family. We probably thought of someone that we've come across in life that is lazy, that sucks the life out of things around them. They're takers, they're not givers. I would say in this room, our problem is probably the opposite. I think it's probably that we don't always find a good balance in working hard versus rest. And so while Proverbs does speak a lot about being diligent in our work, that does not mean that we become workaholics. I couldn't preach this sermon without addressing this. We live in a culture that celebrates those who work long hours. And I don't think we should celebrate that as Christians, because I don't think God celebrates that. In fact, in another wisdom book that Solomon wrote, in Ecclesiastes 4:6, he says this: better one handful with tranquility or peace than two handfuls with toil and chasing after the wind. So in other words, he's saying better to have half with peace than to have both hands full with constant work and constant chasing after other things. It's better to be at peace and have less than to not be at peace and have more. And so I think what Solomon would be teaching us and what God wants us to do is not become workaholics, not work all these long hours, because it's not good for us. In fact, a Harvard Business Review found that working long hours are strongly linked to higher divorce rates and, of course, reduced time with children. The World Health Organization did a study in 2021, and they said that regularly working 55-plus hours a week increases the risk of stroke by 35% and heart disease by 17% compared to a standard 40-hour work week. Working long hours was shown to be associated with higher levels of anxiety, depression, and burnout, and it's not good for our kids. Studies reveal that kids whose parents consistently work long hours often experience higher stress, poor school performance, and emotional distance from their parents. It's not good. And so I don't think Solomon is any way saying here, you need to work long hours and you need to become a workaholic. I think what Solomon is saying here is that we need to work hard when we're at work. And that's my... So the way I organize my sermon is hook, head, so I teach you what Scripture says, heart, I try to do something that connects us, and then the last part is hands, because hands is what we need to do. Well, for the first part of the hands part is we need to work hard when you're at work. I think that's what Solomon's getting to here. I think this is what God would want us to do. Diligent can also mean sharp or pointed. And so when I think about something being sharp or pointed, I think about a really sharp pencil. A really sharp pencil, you know it's going to be exact. You know that it's not going to smudge everywhere. And you know that it's going to be consistent there for the first little bit. And so when you think about a diligent person, if you describe them as exact, even careful, and consistent, I think that would match pretty well with someone who is a hard worker. So then I thought about this. Would I want to work with someone that isn't exact? In other words, I know what they're going to do, and they're going to do a good job with it. They're careful, and they're consistent. You know what you're going to get out of them every day. And I would love to work with people like that. At Food Lion, if I knew that what I was going to get, and I'll brag on Michael a little bit. Michael worked with me at Food Lion a little bit. I knew what I was getting out of Michael each day. Michael was going to be there. He was going to do his job. He wasn't going to complain. If you ask him, one of the things we had problems with was getting people to get carts in. And I could tell, which I look at the schedule and say, I'm going to have to go get carts all day long because these people won't. I mean, I could ask them to, but they're going to complain about it. But then you saw other times where like, okay, we can split the time getting carts in. We can all do our own part and do a good job with it. And so I could tell when I was working with people who are diligent or not just based off of that. And so I love working with people that I know that they're going to do a good job, I know they're going to pull their own weight, and I know who they're going to be when they're at work. And so for us, we can look at that, look for that in other people, but for us, we need to be that person. We need to be the person that other people want to work with. We need to be the other person that, be the person that the other person, people say, yes, they're on my shift today. Yes, they are here today. Yes, they are working. Yes, I know they're going to do a good job. And obviously you can't do that if you're going to be lazy. If you do this, if you work hard when you're at work, it's going to be a good testimony to Jesus. You're going to be a good witness to Jesus in the workplace. People are going to want to know Jesus because of the way you work. Next thing, though, and this is going to attack the workaholics in us, is that we need to have clearly defined rhythms of rest. God set for us up for us the rhythm of rest with creation. God worked for 6 days. He rested on the seventh. He commanded us in the Ten Commandments to do the same. That is how we are supposed to live. And I think we do it weekly, yes. So I've taught before, you need to have 1 day a week where you disconnect from the world, disconnect from work, and you just have a Sabbath's rest. That is commanded in Scripture. It is something that we should be pushing and looking for in our lives. I started a few years ago in my life, and what I struggled with is thinking because I was taking one 24-hour period to rest, that I was being lazy. And that's because the hard work, hard value that has been instilled in me from a young age was there. And I kind of thought to myself, well, if I'm not working hard, if I'm just sitting here and I'm resting today, then I'm being lazy. And laziness is not good. Laziness is the people that we look down upon. And I had to learn that taking that 24-hour period does not mean that you're lazy. It means you're being obedient to Jesus. It means you're being obedient to God. And so my tips for us is, number one, yes, set up 1 day a week, one 24-hour period just to rest. I like to do kind of the Jewish schedule of Sabbath. I don't do it Friday to Saturday because often we have things to do on Saturday, but I like to do it Thursday night to Friday night. And I like to do the nights because you had all day Thursday to work, and then if you need to get something done Friday evening, you can, but you're still taking 24 hours to be done with work and to rest. But then also, I think what we need to do daily, and this is hard for some people, we need to leave work at work. When you come home, be present at home. Don't bring work home. So try to leave it there as much as you can, and that's specifically hard in our house for Sarah being a school teacher. Often there's stuff to grade, things to do, that type of thing. But if we can, leave work at home. It's especially hard for me because I'm never off work, and so it's always kind of on my mind, but I have to try to be intentional to disconnect. So have clearly defined rhythms of rest. Work hard when you're at work. I think that handles everything for us. Let's talk about others. I think we need to encourage working hard to those around you. I think that first starts with your children. Teach the importance of working hard to your children. I think practically this means giving them responsibilities when they reach an age where they can do things. And when I say give them responsibility, give them chores to do around the house, but then also show them how the economy works. You do this, you're going to get a little something. You don't have to pay them $100, but you can give them $5 for doing the work. And $5 to a 10-year-old is big, you know. $5 to a 12-year-old is big. $5 to a 31-year-old is big. So, but practically, give them responsibilities and then something to do and reward them for doing it. I think it teaches the way that the world works. And then also, I think what we all should be doing as parents is modeling what that work looks like. Modeling what working hard looks like. Modeling for them the rhythms of rest that we should have in our life. and model for them the way they should live and work when they become older. This is going to make some Asheville High School people mad, but at Food Lion, we would often hire people from both Asheville City Schools and from Southwest Randolph area. And we'd hire some from Randolph too. But because of the cultural values, the work, how hard work has been instilled in this area, about every time you could tell who was from Asheville City and who was from Southwest. Because the Southwest ones would come in there and do their job, often get promoted and work hard. Country people. And then you got them city people up there. In the big old city of Asheville that don't know what work is. But we legit could tell a difference. In fact, I started telling my boss, I said, if they're from Southwest, you know you're probably going to promote them within a year. And sure enough, that happened more times than not. Now, of course, we had some good Asheville City folks, but I think because it was taught by our parents and modeled for us in this area in such a way because of the agriculturally driven area we're in, it translated even to a place like Food Lion. And so I can see that, the importance of that, and I want to instill that in my children. So we can encourage our children by setting the example. We can set the example at work for our fellow coworkers who may be lazy. In other words, what I think about with that is we raise the level of what the minimum effort looks like each day. If you come in and you're going to work hard and do more than everyone else there, they're going to try to do better. The way this played out for me at Food Lion, I would go get carts in, and eventually someone would say, Nathan, you've got carts in all day long. Why don't I go get carts in so you don't have to? That's raising the level. That's something that we can do practically as a little nudge to everybody is, hey, you can do better. But the hardest one, I think, is encouraging those who are close to us in life who are lazy. First, I think we just need to talk to them about the negative effects of laziness. And I've already went through the studies and what Proverbs says. Practically, I think we try to help them find some type of purpose in life. If they can work, get them to work. If they can do something else, then get them to do something else that makes a positive impact. It'll give them purpose. It will fill that need in their heart. But sometimes the only way to get a lazy person or a sluggard to do something is to show them some tough love and not enable them to continue to live that way. In fact, it's scriptural. Here's what Paul told the church in Thessalonica, 2 Thessalonians 3:10. He said, for even when we were with you, we gave you this rule. The one who is unwilling to work, they shouldn't eat. The one who is not willing to get up and do anything, don't enable them. And Paul, that sounds mean, that sounds harmful, that sounds harsh. But if we understand that we were created to work, and if we don't work, we're missing something spiritually and mentally and physically in our life. We have this hole in our heart that we're missing because we're not being who God has created us to be. This actually could be a loving thing to try to push them out of their comfort zone, out of the idleness that we can get in, and into doing something with our life that makes an impact. And so Paul is saying, hey, show them this tough love sometimes. It's hard, but it's needed. And sometimes we have to show that, especially to those that are immediately around us. But ultimately, I think what we have to understand is that we all need to work as if you are working for God. This is from the New Testament, Colossians chapter 3. Paul covers this when he's talking to the Colossian church. He says this, specifically talking to slaves. Slaves, obey your earthly masters in everything, and do it not only when their eye is on you to curry their favor, but with sincerity of heart and reverence for the Lord. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for human masters. Since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward, it is the Lord Christ you are serving. Now, this is a command to slaves. Slavery, bad, evil. We look back at that today and we say, that's not good. And what Paul is saying to them is that you need to work for your earthly master as if you are working for the Lord. So how much more true would that be for us who work and get paid, who are not slaves? We need to work in our workplaces as if we are working for the Lord. And if you look at it as, I'm not working for Food Lion, I'm not working for the school system, I'm not working for this, I'm working for God. Are you not going to do a better job? Are you not going to take your job more seriously than you would if you were just working for a local company? I think I would. I think I do. My W-2 might say Cornerstone Church, but I work for the Lord. Your W-2 might say whatever your job is, but you work for the Lord. And so Paul, before that, and this is the way I'm just going to tie everything together in Colossians 3:17. Paul says, whatever you do, whether in word or deed, do it all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. You can glorify God with your work. It's interesting, the last song they sang was Gratitude, and God led me to say all that before Gratitude. That was not planned. But talking about blessing the Lord, one way we can bless the Lord is through worship in song. But another way to bless the Lord is through worship with our work, by doing a good job with our work, by being diligent workers. Whatever we're doing, wherever we are at. So we need to strive to do that, to bring glory to God, bring other people to him, and ultimately to make this world a better place. And so I told you a few weeks ago, when we don't do a song to end, it's because I want the response not to be up here at the altar, not here in church. I want the response to be out there. And that's the way we're ending today. You're probably not going to work today. Some of you might be, some of you might not be. But you're going to go to work this week probably. And if you're going to work this week, that's when you respond, by working as if you work for God, work for the glory of God, and work in a way that makes other people want to know him. So let's pray, and then you'll be dismissed.